Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Good Monday. Thanks for being with us. Paula Bovin and I are going to talk about her career at the Arizona Republic in her segment today. This is Paula's final week as a columnist. She is leaving the Arizona Republic. She has taken a job outside of the newspaper. And so I want to get into some personal stuff with Paula. The segment will be a little different. Paula's not leaving the show, unless she wants to leave the show. I don't want to leave the show. And she's talked about things she wants to do outside of it. But her career is coming to an end at AZ Central this week. So we will talk with Paula. Be pretty straightforward with her at about 10:35. Well, I had a great weekend. I don't know about you. I had a hectic weekend. So Saturday, I went to L.A. to do this Liev Schreiber interview off the movie Chuck. And the movie Chuck, I screened it last week. I don't know if Bill's going to like it or not, Goody Kuntz, but I did like it a great deal. And it's the backstory, really, of how Sylvester Stallone became Sylvester Stallone. And it's also Liev Schreiber portraying Chuck Wepner. And it's got a lot of tie-ins, and it's the typical boxer story in one sense of a guy who goes, has it all, blows it all, bottoms out, and how it led to Rocky and the whole Rocky series. It's really interesting. The thing is, so the way this works, the movie studios pay for us to come over, full disclosure. And so I get the ticket, and I, being an idiot, thought that it was one of those where I was already checked in. I had a lot going on last week. So I show up at the airport and I'm not checked in, and it is Southwest. So guess what that means? Ding, you're in the C group. Not only that, it's an oversold flight. Oversold flights seem to be happening more and more in our society. I don't know why that is. We all saw what happened with United, but I'm sitting there at Southwest and it's oversold and they're offering $400 and the cost of your ticket. But I didn't purchase the ticket. So I'm the last person on the flight. It's never good. Have you seen that person who walks in there last on the flight and they are either tall or they're heavier? Be nice. I go all the way to the back of the plane. I'm in the very last row. Fortunately, I'm on the aisle. But it's a Southwest seat, which is built for somebody like, I don't know, Eric, probably like your height.
Not even. I mean, I'm either getting very, very big or airplane seats are getting very, very small.
You're on a diet.
Yeah, but I don't think I'm that big. You're just tall. You're just a big guy.
So I have to fold up and get in there. And the person next to me is into my seat because they're large.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine. I put on a podcast. We land at LAX. I get over to do the interview. It's at Santa Monica at a very, very nice high-end hotel. Liev Schreiber is great. He's absolutely top-notch, really cool guy. And we actually talked about our kids, and my son had a club basketball tournament this weekend. His kid had a club basketball tournament. And so we were just doing all that stuff, geeking out on our kids. And, you know, we're talking about the movie, and he was terrific. So I get back to LAX. Like, I'm there maybe on the ground for an hour and a half. By the time I get into the hotel, a friend of mine that I've known for many, many years, who's done the movie publicity business. He's retiring, so we caught up. I get back to LAX, and guess what? Same seat going back. Same situation going back. Not the same person. Someone who's probably could have been an offensive lineman, though. So both ways was rather difficult, but it's fine. It's part of what we do. And
it was only like, luckily it was only about an hour flight.
Sure. If it was,
if you're going from here to Vermont, you'd have big issues.
I would have looked to that guy, you know, on Southwest, there's the magic seat. It's that seat in the exit row on the right side that doesn't have a seat in front of it.
Oh, yeah.
I would have paid that guy a lot of money and bought him a lot of alcohol.
Where you can just stretch all the way out.
Oh, yeah. A lot of alcohol I would have given that guy. Anyways, that was Saturday. Son had club basketball tournament Saturday night, so I got back in time to watch him do that. Yesterday, my daughter turns 20. Actually, she turns 23 today, and we spent some time together. And through all this, I'm watching sports. I'm watching the Diamondbacks over the weekend, and the Diamondbacks are first in all of baseball in runs scored. Like, Friday night was batting practice. We had a club game, and I got home at 8 o'clock from our basketball game and watched it. And I think the NBA playoffs are compelling. But I have to tell you, I am really hooked on watching the baseball team every day. It's become one of my simple pleasures. I am that guy that does like to sit there and watch a baseball game. And I really enjoyed it. So Friday night, they beat around the Dodgers. Saturday night, they beat around the Dodgers. And then yesterday, I'm watching Shelby, and he's doing his thing. He's not pitching great, but he's not pitching terrible. And then the fifth inning hits, and he just becomes like a madman because he walks Brandon McCarthy to start the inning, and he just loses his mind out there. Like, he literally melted down. I've seen that in sports where there's a player that has something that hits them during a game, and they can't get it back. They can't get their composure back. They can't find their stroke, whatever it might be. Kind of like the time John Daly walked off the course over at TPC Scottsdale. When I'm watching McCarthy, I'm watching Shelby, he's losing it. But then the trainer comes out, and maybe there's an injury. Maybe that's a reason why Shelby's losing it. I don't know. I didn't see that injury to start with. It was something between the ears with him yesterday.
I'm encouraged, Brad, by what happened last weekend, because we saw the end of that Padres series where the Diamondbacks scored one run in two games.
Yeah.
Then you have the Dodgers coming in with Kershaw pitching in one of the games, and they scored, what, 23 or 24
runs
in the first two games?
Oh, the first two games.
In the first two games.
Yeah.
That is very telling to me. I mean, that is, we're going to go home, we're going to get right, and they did. In the past, you would not see that. That two-game losing streak would go to a four-game losing streak, which would trickle to seven of eight or eight of ten.
Yep.
You don't see that anymore.
Well, and again,
I know it's April. I understand.
I don't care.
But the longer this sample size plays out, the more convinced I am that this is a pretty good baseball team.
Well, and Greinke is throwing tonight. It's the exact same matchup against the Padres as it was last week, and he ended up losing because he made one mistake. Right? And the Padres aren't good. So I know there's this whole thing about how they're opening it with all these games against the National League West and all that stuff. I don't care. Whoever shows up on the schedule, you have to play them. Okay? So they have this run here where they have the Padres, then they go back east to Washington, then they go to Colorado, and they will have played every team in the National League West within their division, home and away, a month into the season. Which I think is an advantage, because as the year goes along, if you do well, and they're doing well, you know, I think more important on that, they drew over 90,000 fans for a weekend series with the Dodgers. That's really good. That means that there's some interest. And I see the TV numbers with our show being over there too. So it's fine. They're getting a number. And there's interest. It's draft week. We're going to get into that here in a little bit. Some things around the NFL draft this week. Peter had a note in his column this morning. Peter King did. I'll share that with you because it involves the Cardinals. Over on the NBA side, I'm going to sound really jaded on this deal. Steve Kerr has a back and neck issue that is so painful that he's not on the floor for the Warriors. Kevin Durant has a groin issue or a calf issue that's keeping him off the court with the Warriors. I kind of feel like, and Mike Brown's coaching in the interim, and Mike Brown was not good as a coach with the Lakers. He got fired after five games, I think it was. And he's been in and out. He's a nice guy and I think a good coach, but he hasn't been a great coach. People would say, well, he won a championship. How can you say he's not a great coach? Well, I don't know. The talent that he had around him speaks an awful lot. He went to San Antonio last year and studied under Pop, which is a benefit, no matter how many of you nitwits don't think that the Spurs do things right. They do. And so now he comes here and he's been Steve Kerr's right-hand man. Steve Kerr doesn't hire dummies. But I do think there's a little bit of, I don't know what the word is I'm searching for. The Warriors just don't care about Portland. Like we don't care about Portland. We're going to beat Portland. So if Steve doesn't feel well, Steve can say, you know what, I don't feel well. Hey, Mike, why don't you coach? Mike's going to end up becoming a coach in the league, a head coach again in the league because of this, assuming the Warriors don't crap the bed, and I don't think they're going to. And I just think Golden State is saying, we don't really care about this first-round playoff series. Utah beat the Clippers again last night, and the Clippers lose Blake Griffin. When I was in L.A. for the short period of time that I was out there, I did catch up with a media friend who I respect a great deal in L.A., who is plugged in. And this person said to me, you know, the Clippers in Phoenix, the Clippers in Las Vegas is starting to pick up some momentum because people don't care about the Clippers out here. And we know that in Vegas, they're going to go pursue an NBA team. And of course, me sitting over here knowing what's going on, where we have an owner that's making gobs of money for an awful team. He's not happy with his building situation. And cities like Vegas and Seattle and Kansas City are sitting out there. I'm just saying that that you can't ignore what's going on in other markets in this day and age in sports. If you do, you're San Diego without the Chargers. Just remember that. Last night I went and saw Drogba, the intro over at Rising FC, and they won their match 4-3. There actually was some local media that showed up last night that is kind of figuring out that this is a big deal rather than just saying, oh, it's soccer and we don't care and you know and all that stuff. It was a very good crowd. They did not have 7,100 there last night, but it was a very, very well-attended game. So all in all, it was a terrific weekend. And I love it that there's so much going on here in the Valley. Up next, we're going to talk about the draft. So ESPN and the NFL Network, which one are you going to watch this week, too? We're going to talk about their different styles and coverage because both of them have decided they're going to put somebody at the Cardinals facility on Thursday. I'm not quite sure why, but we'll get into that next. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic. I'm Brad Sussman. Brad Sussmat with you. So the NFL draft is Thursday this week. Eric, what are your plans for Thursday and Friday? What are you thinking?
It would help if I pushed the right button.
That's fine.
I'm on the air now. So I am going to be hanging out to the Cardinals on Thursday, and I will probably circle back out there on Friday as well.
So the Cardinals usually have the NFL Network on, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a... I saw a quote from, and I'm not sure where I'm going to be yet. I'm not sure if I'm going to go to the facility, if you're going to be there, or sometimes if the pick
I think Jordan's going to go with me, so I don't know on Thursday.
Well, but here's the thing with the draft. There's sometimes where I like going to a sports bar and just seeing the reaction of people. Like if the Cardinals have a big thing out at their stadium, mm-hmm. which is fine, it's great, but they're all Cardinal fans. They're not Giants fans. They're not Raider fans. They're not... And the draft it brings out everybody. So you kind of like I'll go to Marley's or I'll go to, there's a new sports bar right down the street from me. I may go just sitting there. It has like maybe 50 people and just see who shows up.
And I love the draft. It's one of my favorite. Anything that brings college football to the main stage, even if it's in late April, I'm totally fine with it.
So the NFL, the draft last year did not do well in terms of ratings. The year that Johnny Manziel came out, I read this through a couple of places, was the last draft that broke over 10 million viewers. It was 12 million viewers for the Manziel pick. And you have to figure the Dallas Cowboys, the interest there, that brings out all the Cowboy fans, which is easily the largest fan base that's out there.
And social media. I mean, you don't need to watch the draft now. You can just go on your phone and follow the insiders, and they usually get the picks. And
well, but I'll get into that in a second. So... this year, the Cardinals are one of the five or six, one of the five or six teams that ESPN is going to put a reporter at. They're going to put Britt McHenry at the Cardinals draft.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So you'll see Britt McHenry. So is there something there that's of interest? The NFL Network, they haven't announced who the reporter is yet. But they are going to have reporters at 20 team facilities, including the Cardinals. So the Cardinals have both the NFL Network and ESPN there. And is there some reason why to be at Cardinals? I'm not disputing this or discounting this. It's just, what is the fascination with the 13th pick overall of having ESPN put somebody there? Unless it's because the PR team of the Cardinals is very accommodating, which they are, is very professional, which they are. They have a job to do. Have they cultivated enough relationship that having ESPN come out is a good feather in their cap? Or is there something behind the scenes that's of interest that we're just not seeing? Is it because the Cardinals are a really interesting story in this year's draft because they have a quarterback and a wide receiver that this could be their last season?
I think that's definitely some appeal. because what, I mean, what rows the boat for the NFL draft? It's all the quarterback chatter, and the Cardinals always seem to be in the middle of some sort of quarterback chatter.
Well, let's, so both, now here's something that, so there's going to be buzz at both places, and there'll be buzz everywhere, but there's going to be a little bit more emphasis on the Cardinals because they're going to have national people there on both networks. I myself, I like watching the NFL Network more than ESPN. Chris Berman is no longer at ESPN, so maybe I'll give Trey Wingo a shot. Maybe, if I'm in a space. NFL Network's pretty straightforward. I like that. Their quarterback analysis is going to be done by Kurt Warner, so Kurt's going to do all the analysis. They've got Steve Smith handling the wide receiver analysis as one of their people. I think Steve Smith on camera is pretty good. I like him. Here's the point that I am curious on your end. Let me get to it and make sure that I get this right to you because, yeah, here it is. So Seth Markham is handling the production. He's the senior coordinating producer for ESPN. And he told Sports Illustrated that he has told ESPN staffers that they will not tweet out picks in the first round ahead of Roger Goodell. Quote, we will allow our staffers to tweet any behind-the-scenes conversations teams are having, trade talks, debates, but what we won't allow is for them to flat-out give away draft picks because the commissioner announces them, he said. As I have said in the past, Seth Markham, senior coordinating producer, our viewers have overwhelmingly told us that they do not want us to spoil the drama of the draft in any way. This goes for Twitter, too. I realize that there are those who disagree with this approach, and I'm one of them, but we are not in the business of angering our loyal viewers. And I personally like the unspoiled nature of the event. Fans love sitting on the edge of their seats to hear what the commissioner says. Trust me, Adam Schefter could easily report who each team is going to pick minutes before the commissioner announces it. That would be terrible TV and have no interest in proving that he could do this anyway. And he has no interest in proving he could do this anyways. Now, NFL Network did not give a statement, but they have said that they have instructed their people to not tweet out picks ahead of time.
Here's my first reaction. Okay?
Yeah.
If you're watching ESPN and you are on Twitter, you probably follow NFL insiders from everywhere. You probably follow them from ESPN, from the Monday Morning Quarterback, from the NFL Network, from CBS. So if you don't want to hear the picks, you better just put your phone away. Because just because the ESPN people aren't going to be tweeting them, I guarantee you people will be tweeting those picks. And you're most likely going to recognize some of the names of the people that are, making, okay, that are tweeting.
So my response to you on that is I'm in agreement with you. I think that in this day and age of news, if you know something, report it. What you're just trying to do is grab onto a ratings point. You're trying to fight.
Of course.
You're just trying to fight against this.
There's no reason for ESPN. But like you said, there's no reason for them to tweet out the picks early because they're just robbing Peter to pay Paul. I mean, they're basically just killing their own audience by doing that.
But isn't their audience here too?
Yes, but they aren't totally convinced that it is.
Is it? See, I think
when you're putting manpower,
they're going to lose to this.
Hundreds of cameras and
they're putting manpower into ESPN.com,
but a huge production team into this 3-day draft extravaganza. ESPN almost has to say, "Please watch our TVs and not go on our mobile devices, okay, please."
I will bet you. You want to do a lunch on this? Do we have any lunches pending?
I don't think so.
Okay, I'm going to bet you a lunch on this.
Okay, well, I'm going to have to. Okay, yeah, I'm going to have to agree to the lunch. Okay.
There will be a smaller audience on television this year than 6.1 million that was there last year.
You
must watch this draft.
You must know something if you're giving me that exact number.
That was the number of last year.
You must have talked to someone that knows something.
You don't trust me?
You must have talked to someone that may know something.
Maybe I'm wrong. No, here's why.
Well, of course, yeah.
No, but here's why I'm so. Maybe
I'll get hit by a car today. What's your point?
Here's why I'm ruling this out.
Okay.
Is this a compelling draft?
From actual
Cleveland
star power.
Cleveland has the number one pick.
It's a balanced draft, but it's not.
Is it a compelling draft?
No.
Okay.
It's a deep draft, but that doesn't make it compelling.
It's a deep draft to you and I who are in the middle of the forest. We're in the industry. I don't find it terribly compelling this year.
A guy named Mitchell might be the first overall pick.
Who Peter wrote this morning. Did you read Peter's thing?
I did not.
Oh, but my gosh. Mitchell Trubisky drives up to him in like his 1997 Corolla with 170,000 miles on it. This is Peter's lead. It was really good. That was given to him by his grandmother. I mean, that's not compelling. Miles Garrett is not compelling. He's compelling to you and I, but the average fan, Cleveland's picking first.
And a lot of some people have some pretty big red flags about Miles Garrett.
Yeah, I heard that.
I think he's going to get pushed around the NFL a little bit.
But I think this thing is, you know, we go into this all the time. I think more and more people are having this in their hand, and it doesn't really matter who's on the screen. Like, am I going to watch because Trey Wingo is in place of Chris Berman? Heck no. I don't care. Am I going to want to hear what Kurt Warner has to say about Mitchell Trubisky being with, if the 49ers take him or Cleveland? Yes. Yes, I do care about that. But I really don't care. I certainly don't care at all about five guys sitting around a table or Skip Bayless or Shannon. I don't care. Don't care. I'm one of those guys that give me Pat Kerwin, who's terrific behind the scenes. Give me Jim Miller from the NFL on Sirius. Give me those guys. They're going to give me far. Give me Rick Neuheisel on these quarterbacks. In terms of holding off and tipping picks, I agree with you, but here's the problem. The network or the league is so big, they're going to look at the people that tip picks, and their chances are pretty good. They're tied into somebody. Just because CBS isn't carrying the draft doesn't mean that a CBS guy, if he's tipping picks, isn't going to get his ass kicked. The league is just over heavy on people.
So you think the league sat down with ESPN and said, hey,
no question.
Please don't have your insiders tip the picks.
No, they wouldn't even say please. It's
you're not doing this.
if you're ESPN and you're paying gobs of money, north of $2 billion, you tell me the last 5 years, have they had the best games on Monday Night Football for that amount of money? Heck no.
No.
They're treated like, we're going to give you the fourth-ranked games over here.
The Sunday games are the marquee games now, not Monday night.
And Thursday night.
Well, yes and no.
No. Thursday night games get priority over Monday night.
But those games are usually garbage, too.
Well, so. Okay, but to that point.
And that has less to do with the teams and more of the fact that most of them are coming off of playing 5 days ago and they have to go on the road. And
right, and the NFL wants to make sure that every team has a nationally televised game.
Mm-hmm.
And did you notice that Cleveland and Jacksonville have a nationally televised game? The game in London that's at 6:30 a.m.
Yep.
in the morning.
Well placed.
We're just going to bury you guys because we don't want to see you. All right, Paula's next. And this time with Paula, this is her last time as columnist at AZ Central with us. Doesn't mean she's going away or anything like that. It's just she's going in a different space. So I'm going to get into, the interview you blew. The interview you nailed, the person you still have a problem with. I'm going to get very direct with Paula, and that's next.
Giving you the inside slant on the weekend's biggest stories, it's time for News and Notes with AZ Central sports columnist Paula Bovin. Here again, Brad Sesmat.
I was going to catch up with Paula Bovin, News and Notes, AZ Central sports columnist for one more week, right?
That's correct, yes.
Should we fill them in on how you bought me lunch, you opened doors? I mean, you were like over the top. I don't know what. You treated me like better than I treat myself. I don't know what the deal was the other day, but thank you.
I was just feeling rarely generous there, Brad.
Yeah, what was the deal with that? I don't know.
No.
Rarely generous. I mean, you're leaving one job. Are you emotional about this?
You know what? I mean, to be honest, Brad, not really. I mean, I think part of it is because I'm working right down the street and I will see most of these people. I will still have my hand in sort of freelance writing. And I guess I bought you lunch because I am feeling sort of nostalgic, I think. And
nostalgic's another word for old. Are you suggesting you're with somebody old? Is that the deal?
No, what year
Whimsical.
Did we meet? Do you know what year we met about?
I would say 89, 90.
That's about what I thought. So,
yeah.
I mean, you think how long we've known each other.
It's the first time you bought me lunch.
Now that is not true. But, you know, I was, don't count on it ever happening again, pal.
Well, and here's the reality is your spouse works there.
Yes.
So you know what's going on internally, and it's not like you're not going to see these people anymore.
No, exactly. A lot of these are some of my better best friends, and I see them anyway, you know. So, yeah, it's all good. It's a good thing.
Okay, so your most memorable story. I'm going to have to do this with you now. I could do a 30-minute media podcast with you, and I've actually been considering it, but because we only have 10 minutes, your most memorable story at the Arizona Republic.
Oh, gosh. You know, for some reason, when I went to, I was lucky enough to cover 3 Winter Olympics. And when I went to Vancouver, I decided I was going to fly to Victoria, where Steve Nash grew up, and go to his house and try to do sort of the consummate Steve Nash story, because he was still with the Suns at the time.
Right.
And there was something about, so I go to the, he gave me his address of the childhood house he grew up in. His family did not live there anymore, but the people that lived there allowed me to kind of go in the backyard, look around, and there was a fence in his backyard, and on the other side of the fence, there was a like an elementary school, and there was a basketball court with one basketball hoop, you know, the chain kind, and it was kind of run down.
Yep.
But it was the hoop that Steve Nash told me he would like daily hop over the fence and shoot about, you know, 300 free throws a day. Mm. And it was kind of a symbol of why a guy, if you pass him on the street, you don't necessarily think professional athlete. I mean, he was, what, about 6'2". But you saw, I saw that hoop, and it just was a kind of a representation of his work ethic. And for me to do stories and see where people got their start and how they did it, something about that trip was probably my most memorable.
Story you beat yourself up over.
Oh, gosh. Where do I start? I would say, and I can't, it's maybe the stories that I didn't write. I think when some of the stories broke about domestic violence in the NFL, I wish I had reacted quicker and I wish I had reacted stronger. I think, you know, those stories have happened for a while, but they became more public in recent years, and finally the league started doing something. Why wasn't I calling for the league to do more earlier? You know, that's something I think I would beat myself up over.
Subject matter, who treated you the best?
Oh, gosh, I've been so lucky in this community. You know, Jerry Colangelo has to be at the top of the list for someone as important as he is, even in, you know, when he was at the top of his game here in the sense of having all these teams, his hands in these teams, he would always immediately call back or text me back or grant me an interview, or if he got mad at me, he'd let me know. And then just, you know, a year and a half ago or whatever, I asked him if I could follow him around in Chicago and look at his childhood home. And we did. We got in this nice town car and drove through Chicago, drove through his old neighborhood, which is pretty much my old neighborhood. I grew up a couple miles from him, and his generosity with his time, I never felt there was another motivation, Brad. You know, in our business, sometimes people are nice to you because you can do something for them.
Yep.
I never felt that way with Jerry. I just felt it was real, and I think that's what made him such an accomplished owner and well-respected.
The person you wish you would have healed relationship with that you just can't seem to get closed?
You know, I've made an effort in my career to, when I have issues with people, to try to resolve them, because it drives me crazy if I don't. Probably Dirk Cutter. You know, I don't necessarily agree with things that have happened and his decision to still not talk to me or grant me interviews, but I would like someday to sort of hash it out with him. But he does not want any part of it.
That's interesting. If you were to advise someone to be your replacement, what would you advise them of their walking into?
You know, I think the biggest mistake I made early in my career was that I was so hungry to find a voice as a columnist that I forced one that wasn't me. And I, you know, tried to be, and forgive this comparison, sort of a talk radio, you know, kind of a shouty columnist to this is what I feel and nothing else is right. I would often open the sports pages and read my column and cringe because I knew it wasn't me and I didn't feel good about it. But as I got older and wiser, I just said, this is who I'm going to be, and who I'm going to be is a person who understands that it's not always black and white, a person that tends to look at things a glass half full, a person who was raised to strongly believe in compassion. A lot of those things do not make for a good columnist, I think, at times, or at least that's what I was taught. But I certainly felt much more better about my writing when I started reflecting, when it started reflecting who I was.
Who mentored you?
Oh, gosh. A ton of people. Early in my career, there just were some really good... I got my writing chops sort of in Los Angeles. And so while I don't know if these people necessarily mentored me, but by the way they carried themselves and the way they wrote was that kind of a mentor. I mean, early on in my career, Rick Riley was a columnist at the Los Angeles Times. I used to love reading him. There was a really talented writer named Dave Cass Stevens at the Los Angeles Daily News where I worked, in the Arizona Republic, who was just fantastic. You know, so there were always just these ton of people. And my good friend, who I've talked a lot about, Karen Krause, who lives here, who writes golf for the New York Times, she sort of amazes me every day in her ability to come up with an original story. So she still mentors me, I think.
No, that's good. In this next phase, because you are teaching, but you're not closing the door on writing, but you're not really going to be teaching every day, because there's people that are going to hear this that don't know. There's lots of people have told me, I didn't realize she was leaving. So if you were to lay out what it is exactly you're going to be doing at ASU and what it is you want to do outside of that.
So what I'm doing, and I have been teaching here for the past year and a half, but starting sort of this summer and fall, I'm going to be working in what's called the Cronkite Sports Bureau, and it's part of the amazing sports journalism program they had here at ASU, where you can get your major and your master's in sports journalism. And they have a bureau, which is like a pretty much a regular newsroom, and people, it's like a class that the students can take, and they are operating out of a newsroom. Their work gets published in a lot of different publications around the state, and it's to sort of replicate an actual sports newsroom. And so I'm going to be guiding students there, editing copy, working with this great guy here, Brett Kurland, who a lot of you know, been in the media, and doing that, which has been awesome. I've been doing some of that already. And then I will be still doing some freelance writing, you know, just kind of I'm sort of sorting that part out now, what interests me, what I want to write and all that. But that's kind of my plan.
Could it be outside of sports that you write about?
It could, but, you know, I have not lost my passion for sports and journalism, so I probably will lean more in that direction. And I think as a sort of journalism, still in the journalism field as a professor, I would have to sometimes be, you know, I could spout off things politically. I'd like to go there sometimes, but I think I still have to be cautious about that.
No, I get that. I get that. Who should the Cardinals take at 13?
Oh, good Lord.
is that more difficult than me talking to you about you?
Absolutely, because I was thinking just this morning.
Good Lord.
I wanted them to take a quarterback, but they have been pretty clear. It sounds like they do not want to take that with their top pick. What they need is cornerback, inside linebacker, safety in addition to quarterbacks. I don't know, but I think maybe I think we might see a cornerback be there. Their guy, whoever that may be.
Yeah. Anything else you want to add about your run? I mean, this is a big deal to me that you're walking. I hope when you write your goodbye that you are, because you're going to write a goodbye, right? You're not just going to disappear.
Or I don't. You know, I'm going back and forth on that, Brad. I sometimes things I want to, but it also feels a little self-indulgent to me, which I've never felt journalism
is about.
No, that's
not you. Well, I get that. I get that. I get that. I mean, these last 10 minutes, you've been as transparent as I think you can be on all this, which is good.
Yeah, I don't know. I forget. What was your question?
Are you going to write a goodbye column?
Oh, I don't know. How's that sound? I'm not sure yet.
What is your final assignment?
I will be, actually, it'll be fun. I'm the High School Sports Awards that Arizona Republic does. It's going to be at Gamage Theater, and I will be interviewing Larry Fitzgerald on the stage, who's the special guest.
And that,
so that
is
will be a lot of fun.
This Saturday?
Sunday, I think. Yes.
And are you going to get into anything different with Fitz, or is it pretty straightforward? Have you thought through that
maybe
yet?
A little bit. You know, I have to remember that the audience is a lot of high school students, so I think there will be questions about his experience in high school and growing up and things like that. But I will also be reminding him that when I first started covering him, I used to have to chase him down in the parking lot because he never wanted to do interviews. So
that's
I may
true.
Bring that up, even that's though that's not on the script.
That's funny. Stay well. Appreciate the time and insight. And next week, we have to have a new open for Paula, guys, because next Monday, like, you're cleaning your desk out this week, right? Like, next Monday, we cannot say AZ Central.
That's correct. Yeah, you better change that up.
All right, we'll get that done.
Get on that.
See you soon. Thanks for lunch.
Okay. All right. Yep. Bye.
There's Paula Bovin, News and Notes. For the final time, AZ Central sports columnist. It was good stuff. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports, and we're back with more after this timeout. Brad Sussmath with you, Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Peter King this morning tweeted out, no rest for the GMs. Arizona's Steve Keim doing some last-minute reconnaissance today in Gainesville at University of Florida Prospects. So, you know, you go through the draft and you look at the players. It might be at the University of Florida, or maybe he's going beyond that. And that's what it's like this whole week. I am more interested in what they do later in the draft. I'm one of those guys because they found people like David Johnson later in the draft. He has shown, Steve has shown a propensity of finding some guys that are interesting in later rounds. Doesn't mean that for every John Brown, you're not going to get a Jonathan Cooper. Okay. And that's the way the draft works out. It gets people very excited. As I'm sitting here with you today, I'm hoping they don't take a quarterback in the first round. As much as I like seeing Patrick Mahomes play, it just seems and feels to me as though there's too much being made out of Patrick Mahomes, the Cardinals, and this is the Lions season, and that there is more pressing needs for a team that window of opportunity is this year. What you're saying, if you take Patrick Mahomes to Larry Fitzgerald and to Carson Palmer, is we're just planning ahead. That doesn't mean you don't do that later in the draft. But if you spend an asset, a valued asset at number 13, or if you trade up, the message is very clear and you go get a position player at the spots of need on this team, which are corner. Doesn't mean you don't take a wide receiver. I mean, we see what's going on over there. I'm not convinced. Anybody can tell me all day long John Brown's going to be fine. I don't believe that. Now, David Johnson, I've sat here for the last year and said they use him an awful lot. And if they were to pull a wild card out of it all, you know, if they took Christian McCaffrey, I'd sit here and say, wow, can you believe that? What a great pick that is. If they sat here and took Dalvin Cook, I'd say, are you kidding me? There's some character stuff going on there. So with each pick, you can't just sit here automatically and say, great pick, even though many people do that because it's their team. And fans means being blind. You're a fan. You just want to see your team do it. You're not going to subjectively say, okay, so why did they do that? If they take Patrick Mahomes, is it a terrible pick? No, but I'd be a little disappointed at 13. I think there's more pressing needs. I believe that Carson and Drew Stanton, you can win this year. My whole point is, if you didn't have any of those guys in place and you know that they're leaving, at some point you've got to take somebody and develop them. So where are you at on the picks? What do you mean? What do you want to see? We've sat here and talked about it.
Oh, I'm just sort of in a wait and see spot. I'm in agreement with you. I think taking a quarterback at number 13 is, especially for someone who's not going to play at all. But the Cardinals have been very transparent that they don't necessarily take guys that need to play right away. I mean, DJ Humphreys took a year. Kim Dichie didn't see much from last year. They're hoping
a redshirt year or
kind
being
of
on scholarship.
Yeah, they're hoping he makes the same jump that DJ does. But I would say there's so many good cornerbacks in this draft and they really need a cornerback opposite of Patrick Peterson. So if I'm Steve Keim, I'm going to take one of those long athletic corners.
Okay, that's a safe route to go.
And sometimes I'm all about the safe route.
No, and I am too. I'm also, though, about if you can go get Chandler Jones and you've got to make something big happen, like Steve's not afraid to go make something happen. And if the Cardinals have an asset, if you traded from 13 to 16 and you picked up a fourth round pick as part of the process, I'm fine with that.
I am too.
I'm fine with that. If you traded from 13 up into the top 10 to grab a quarterback, I would just be stunned by that.
Unless there's one guy have their heart set on.
But I just think that watching them last year, unless they're going to go into the, well, if we just had a kicker and a punter, we would have been a Super Bowl contending team. I don't buy that. You cannot convince me that you're corner opposite, and you cannot convince me Tyrann Mathieu is a little bit like Eric Bledsoe now. You just kind of hold your breath on the knees things with those guys, and you get the best run that you can out of them.
And the quarterback, Brad, is sort of a fine line, because if they did draft a quarterback who did not play this year, but he was the quarterback of the future, I'd be okay with it, because you need a quarterback to win in the NFL. But I'm looking at that 13th pick, and there are other areas. It's not like the Cardinals don't just need a quarterback. There are other positions. They need a linebacker. They need a corner. There are other spots that need to be filled. And if this is a we're going to win now team, they think they're going to win now.
Okay, you saw the schedule on Thursday. Uh-huh. We have not talked since Thursday. And we played W's and L's before the schedule came out.
It's a pretty balanced, even schedule. I mean, you've got the bye right smack dab in the middle, and you start off on the road, but they're not daunting road games to start. And you get some home games in the back half. That game against Seattle on New Year's Eve should be fun.
I mean, all these cheerleaders saying there's 12 wins there. I suppose there is, but come on. What you're saying is that this team is going to be in bounce back mode. I look at that 49er on a Sunday and Seattle on a Thursday one again and say anything can happen on a Thursday night. I mean, that was a classic. That game was a classic last year. I mean, I think opening with Dallas does everything for fandom. Everything for fandom doesn't help them out. That's a good team you're going to open with at home.
And you better hope that you're at least 1-1, because you don't want to be 0-2 playing Dallas at home. You don't want to be 0-2 playing Dallas at home.
That's my point. Is it manageable having Detroit and Indianapolis on the road the first couple weeks?
Sure.
Sure, it's manageable.
They're both good teams, but it's not they're very winnable games.
Are the Cardinals a great team? No.
No.
They're a good team, too. So it's like it's a coin flip. I don't look at those. I'm sure people in Detroit are saying, we opened with Arizona. They got an aging quarterback. They got an aging wide receiver. And they had a whole bunch of guys on defense that either didn't get through or that they lost. They lost Tony Jefferson,
and
which
Lions,
is a huge loss.
Lions were a
loss.
Playoff team last year. So
yeah.
I'm sure the Lions are like, we can win this game.
We can win this game. And you know, same thing with Indianapolis. All right. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. Our television show on Fox Sports Arizona is every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, 14 airings a week. We appreciate the partnership with them. Jared Nielsen is our chairman of the board. Eric, as always, Eric Sorensen, terrific at what he does day in and day out. Senior executive vice president of nothing or everything, depending on the day. Actually, his day is just getting started. We do a show. All of us, our days are just getting started. And we get out of here and we go do all sorts of content that's up on our website that you can check out. Sports360AZ.com, Sports360AZ.com. We're Arizona, Arizona, Arizona-centric. Not the same old stuff everyone else is doing. We're off the beaten path, and we have some fun with it. We've been doing this for 5.5 years. We appreciate our sponsors. Without our sponsors, we are not here, and we're not here without you. Thanks for being with us.